thank you for joining us again. Welcome to Yellow Bee Pod. My name is Natalie and this is my podcast, our podcast. It's all about highlighting the stories from East and Southeast Asian diaspora. Nice to meet you if you're new. This is episode 13. Whoop whoop. Whoa, 13's an unlucky number, right? Are you superstitious? I'm not really, but if there's any problems with this episode, maybe I'll become superstitious. I don't know. What's an unlucky number for East and Southeast Asian countries? Well, in Chinese culture, the number 4 is unlucky, right? The way you say the number 4 in Chinese sounds like the word for death. I think I've got that right. Well, thanks for joining me again for our lucky or unlucky episode number 13. What have I been doing over the last week? Oh, I did say in my last episode, I promised to watch a episode of the Korean drama Crash Landing on You. I did do that. I kept my promise. I watched the first episode. And so the storyline is a South Korean woman goes paragliding and due to a storm, she lands in North Korea. Oh, well, I've only watched the first episode and I don't want to spoil it for anyone who hasn't watched it. Although I do feel like I'm also the last person who watched it. So I watched the first episode. What did I think? The people are beautiful, obviously. I expected no less. Well, to be honest, nothing happened in the episode that I didn't already know. People have been speaking about it so much over the last couple of months that, I mean, I knew the general idea of the main storyline. Obviously, I don't know what's going to happen in the rest of the series. Yeah, I've watched the first episode and a bit of the second one. I'll let you know if I keep watching it. Actually, I've mainly been watching shows and movies on Disney Plus over the last week, so we got Disney Plus to watch Hamilton, so a recording of the original Broadway cast doing that musical theatre performance, which was something I was really looking forward to watching. Hamilton is another thing where the hype has just been crazy and I've never watched it, never ever watched it. I didn't even know the storyline. So yeah, I watched that last weekend and it was intense. Like, it's very long. The whole thing is a musical, which actually I love. It's kind of like Les Mis where the whole thing is sung or rapped and it just means that you really have to focus. Like, there's just so much going on. And did you know that Philippa Sue, who plays Eliza Schuyler, Eliza Hamilton, who's the main like female lead, or the wife of Alexander Hamilton, who's the main character, she's Asian American. Did you know that? I actually didn't, because I know when I look at her, I didn't automatically assume that she had Asian heritage, but she does. And that's something I found out pretty recently. Also, the same character in the London West End cast is Rochelle Ango, who is Filipina. And she reacted to my Instagram story after I tagged her, which is so cool. Like, she's so, so talented. It's really amazing to see more roles in musical theatre for like Southeast Asian artists. I mean, I think in the past it was in the shows King and I or Miss Saigon. There are some other roles as well. I think Gretchen Wiener in the Mean Girls musical is played by an Asian American. I don't know how I feel about that. I don't know if there's something there about their Asianness being taken away when they portray characters which are white. And it's something I need to think about more as I'm not in this musical theatre world. But I would love to know your thoughts about that. But yes, Hamilton was great. And now I've got Disney Plus. I mean, we're probably going to cancel it after this month. But me and my sisters have been watching a whole bunch of, you know, really old Disney shows and movies. So not just the classic cartoons like the princess ones, but they also have all the Pixar movies and some documentaries, National Geographic stuff as well. And I've pulled together a list of some selected shows and movies on Disney Plus that have Asian characters or Asian cast members. You can find that on, the best place I think is on Instagram. It's kind of been popping off. I think it's my most liked, most shared post since I started my page and started this podcast, and which is good. I'm really glad that people would find it useful as a resource. So sharing it and bookmarking it so that they can hopefully come back to it and watch some of these shows if they're looking for Asian representation. There's so much to watch that we might not hear about, or when we see it, we might not know that some of the characters or actors are of East or Southeast Asian descent. So it's kind of nice to highlight it. But really, I just pulled it together because I want to watch this stuff and I want someone to watch it with. It's nice to have a binge watching buddy. So I've also started watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which Chloe Bennett and Ming-Na Wen are in. So they're both actresses of Asian descent who I love, even though I've never watched this show. And if you're watching it as well, let me know. I don't know whether I can commit to the full, I think, 5 seasons. And 2 other movies which I watched, which I didn't expect to be so good, was Wendy Wu, Homecoming Warrior, which is one of those cheesy Disney Channel original movies. The star is Brenda Song. And Justin Chun is also in it, which I didn't know. He's an Asian American actor. who now writes Asian American stories for movies of his own, which is really cool. And Mulan 2, which I don't know why I've never watched this. Like, I love Mulan, but yeah. And it was also a chance to highlight that current Disney Channel TV shows. So back in the day, maybe they had Sweet Life of Zack and Cody, which did have Brenda Song in it as well. Hannah Montana, Wizards of Waverly Place. But now two of their shows more recently are Bizardvark,
Labrat's Elite Force,
and Andy Mack. Those have Asian American actresses. Now, like, young people growing up can see these shining examples. Oh, well, all the Disney stars, they're always really, you know, cookie cutter and wholesome and, you know, charismatic and smiley. So now they include some actresses with Asian descent. I haven't watched those shows, so I don't know whether they talk about their Asian descent or the TV show. And I don't even know if the characters, they explicitly say that they're Asian or whether they're a different ethnicity. Oh, also, there's High School Musical, the series. So it's like a TV series spin-off of the original High School Musical movies. And apparently the main character is that. The actual character, they reference like her Filipino heritage, which is pretty cool. Go check out the post on the Instagram, at YellowBeePod. So you can check it out and let me know if you watch any of these recommendations, because I've been watching them too and I would love to discuss it. So in the last episode, as well as promising to watch some of Crash Landing on You, I also spoke to guest Ken Cheng about getting mixed up with other Asian people. This has happened to both of us, and if you want to hear who we got mixed up with, you can go check out episode 12. Go and download it now so you can listen to it after this episode. And so many of you got in touch to say that you've also been mistaken or mixed up with another Asian person. I want to read out some of the messages that I got from Instagram. Always really keen to hear from listeners, whether it's on Instagram, Twitter, or you can also email. Oh, the email is yellowbeepod@gmail.com. So someone said, I used to work with a Filipino woman. We worked in different departments, but they overlapped a lot. The amount of times I was mistaken for her or her for me were unreal. We looked nothing alike, but we both had dark hair and glasses. Well, apparently that's enough for people to always get people mistaken. A similar one, a listener said, I get it so often at work too, unfortunately. I get mistaken for another Asian who was pregnant, much shorter and wore glasses. So in this case, they had loads of differences. And actually, they still got mixed up. I think getting mixed up or someone thinking that you're pregnant when you're not, that's not ideal, is it? Another listener said, at any point in my life, I've always been mixed up with the handful of other Asians in the same proximity. At school, I was one of two Asian girls. She's Japanese. There were two Asian girls in her year. Carries on and says, yet I was frequently called by a girl in the year above. At work, purely because I moved desk to where an Asian person was sitting, the person opposite me kept on calling me by her name. We look nothing alike other than she's also Chinese. Yeah, that's so annoying. And sometimes I feel like, is it really race related? Am I okay to call it out? Because it might just be the case that they've forgotten a name, or, you know, it does happen. I think that some people look alike. People of different ethnicities might look like other people of that ethnicity, I guess. I'm not saying I've never mistaken someone's name. I'm sure I have. But it just happens so frequently to not just Asian people, but all groups of people of colour. That is a problem.
It makes us feel invisible and kind of like we're all just replaceable.
Another listener wrote in talking about why it might be that people get mixed up. I think it's in many cases they know so few Asian descent people. I've had a couple people apologise to me after finding out I wasn't my colleague, but it also came with a caveat of, you just look so alike. Oh, I hate it when people say that. I think people just say that, and I would agree with what she put, that it's just to make them feel better about their mistake. And it always feels really awkward when you call someone out and says, actually, my name is Natalie. If you want Lucy, she's sat over there, or whatever her name is. And they're the ones who made the situation awkward by sort of being lazy and making the mistake. But somehow it's more awkward when I point it out, and I'm the one who's supposed to, I feel the pressure to sort of smooth over the situation and make it not awkward. Like, ha ha ha, yeah, you're right, we have similar hairstyles. What? No, it's just because you don't know enough Chinese people, or you don't make the effort in your head to differentiate us by not seeing us other than just seeing our race and being like, yes, Chinese woman, they must be the same as this other Chinese woman, or sometimes a different Asian ethnicity, since Chinese is just considered default for people who make assumptions about people's ethnicities. This one makes my blood boil. I'll read out one more. A listener said, I remember in primary school, a prospective student came for the day. She was Korean. The listener who wrote in is of Chinese descent. She carries on and says, my primary school teacher asked me to have a chat with her privately to make her feel welcome in, quote, our language. What? Oh my God. So the teacher assumed that they were not only the same ethnicity, but they would speak the same language, even though they didn't, and they weren't even of the same ethnicity. I was so confused. I was in year four, so she would have been a kid. What? How old are you in year four? 8, maybe 9? Oh, so she was just a child. I was so confused. I was in year four, and was probably the first time I felt people only saw me as my race. That's ridiculous. See, even 8-year-olds are out here getting racist, ignorant experiences, and that came from a teacher. That's a huge problem. Oh, that's also something that came up recently. So this morning I was part of a diversity and inclusion business breakfast panel online event, which was really great. It was great to be able to talk about how to diversify some of the industries that the different panelists worked in, especially in regards to working with young people and recruitment. I'm really grateful to have been part of this panel to share something a little bit different to the other speakers. And one of the audience members asked whether there's support for teachers and educators and schools to get our conscious bias training or any sort of diversity and inclusion related training. And basically the answer was no, it doesn't exist. And other teachers who were in the audience reiterated and shared their experiences that they had never had it in all of their teaching education and all the training courses that they did while working as teachers themselves. That's a problem. I'm not saying that equality, diversity, inclusion training or unconscious bias training is going to fix all your problems, but if you don't talk about it, if you don't have any sort of support or training or anything, or if teachers are just ignorant, you end up making mistakes like this where you assume the Chinese kid will be able to speak to a new Korean kid in their language. They don't share a language, apart from maybe English. Ugh, that's so annoying. Thank you so much for everyone who commented on my post about people getting mixed up, or actually any of my posts, or people who have dropped me a message, DM, email. I love hearing from you and I really appreciate it. I also want to hear from you from this next thing. So I did something called the True Asian Test. Right, it's an online website, trueasiantest.com. This is not sponsored. And basically what it is, what it says here is a parody of the rice purity test. I didn't really know what a rice purity test was, but when I went on it, it was sort of a list of things that kind of like show that you're not innocent. So it talks about things about like drugs or sex and stuff. And it's sort of things that you might check off if you're not innocent, or you're, I don't know, like adult experiences. But the True Asian Test, it's a list of 88 things, and you go through the list and check off all the ones that you have done, and then it gives you a score for your Asian traits, your Asian tendencies. Oh, 88, that's like a lucky number, because 8 is a lucky number for Chinese people, because it sounds similar to the word for wealth, I think. Yeah, like fortune, success, prosperity, wealth, something like that. Right, so I want you to go onto this website, ricepuritytest.com, and please let me know what you get in your score. I would absolutely love to know. And I'll put a post up on my social media where you can publicly post your scores. Don't be embarrassed though. I reckon a lot of our listeners, including people who are not Asian, are going to get scores which are higher than mine. Right, so my score, I got like 34%, which is not great. I mean, that's definitely a fail. Although it gave me a grade C, I think. So basically, I checked off 30 out of 88 on the list. And it was quite hard, actually. When I was looking through the list, I was like, well, there's so many of these which I don't have. And there's some on there that are quite similar. So there's ones like, have you ever cut up small pieces of fruit for your friends or family? And then there's another checkbox, which is, has anyone ever bought you cut up fruit? And obviously this isn't a true test of whether you're Asian or not. So don't take this to be defining your identity or making you feel not Asian enough. Please don't take it that way. Especially because looking down the list, I think they're quite focused on Chinese diaspora or East Asian diaspora. So if you're Southeast Asian or Central Asian or South Asian, some of the cultural references might not be the same for your background. There's a whole range of different things that you check off. It's talking about Mahjong, but my family, I mean, I didn't really grow up with Mahjong in my life, like the, what is it, like a tile game. And my mum actually only learned how to play Mahjong recently. Okay, not that recently, but it was within my adult life. And actually, I learned to play Mahjong a bit, although I can't really remember how to play now. I used to play with some Asian friends who were actually from Asia in the casinos in Manchester, which is where I studied. But it was actually after I graduated university. I visited Manchester a lot after I graduated still and learned a little bit about how to play when I was there. But we never did any of the gambling, so I don't know all the rules and all the scores and I don't even know if what I'm saying is correct, but yeah, basically I don't really know Mahjong. Another one of the questions is, do you have a heavy woolly floral duvet slash blanket? Which is so random, but I definitely know what they mean, like this Asian auntie blanket with a really thick one. And I'm raising this because they are so good for winter, like you can put one underneath you and put one on top of you as well, and then you're just fully cozy. And I want to know, where do you buy these? Because I actually want one. I'm preparing for next winter. I'm going to hibernate. Just let me know where I can get one of these blankets, please. A few other ones on the list are, did you do mostly science and math subjects, Asian 5? I didn't know what Asian 5 was, so I searched it up, although you can kind of guess from the question. But I searched it up and it's, I think it came from New Zealand, and it was basically saying if you took math and science. And yes, I think I definitely did do that. So maybe here in the UK, we need to define our own Asian 5. And I was thinking about it. So Asian 5 might be, or Asian 4 maybe for your A-levels. So it could be all the sciences, biology, chemistry, physics, and then also maths, and maybe further maths for A-level. So that would be 5. That would be your Asian 5. But I don't know whether many people take all 5 subjects. So maybe we'll take, no, we've got to keep further maths in. I feel like that's so stereotypical Asian. Okay, we'll take out biology. Actually, no, you need biology for medicine. Okay, I don't know. But basically, science and math subjects, and we can sort of define our own Asian 5 for here in the UK. It's a bit of a stereotype, but you know what? I checked that box. That was one of my 30 in my final score. And the last one I want to mention that I checked off was, did you watch the OG Asian YouTubers, including Just Kidding Films, Nigahiga, Kev Jumba, oh my god, throwback, Timothy Delaghetto, Wong Fu, 100% yes. When I was a teenager, growing up and finding these YouTubers, I don't even know how I found them, but especially, yeah, like Kev Jumba and Nigahiga was the top most subscribed YouTuber for some time. And this was in a time when having 1 million subscribers made you the most famous YouTuber in the world. But now, I mean, so many people have 1 million. It's still a lot of people, but it's nowhere near the amount of clout that it would have been before. I don't know. I guess so many people have 1 million that is, if you don't have 1 million YouTube subscribers, people say that you're irrelevant. But yeah, that was in my head the real heyday of YouTube content and vlogging and skits. And there were so many Asian Americans on there. We just flocked to them because we didn't see Asians in mainstream media. Therefore, we went onto YouTube where people were able to create content for themselves. And in this time, it was pretty low tech. It was like a guy sitting in front of his webcam at his desk in his bedroom. Where it's not like now where some YouTubers do mad things and crazy stunts and have staff like videographers. Yeah, that was a real heyday of YouTube for me. Did you watch these YouTubers too? Which ones did you watch? Are there any on this list which you did watch or any that you would like to add? There's a few more here that I knew of. Michelle Fan, Freddie W, is that how you say his handle? And Blogilates, is that how you say it? Well, these people, I still know who they are, but I didn't necessarily watch their channels that much growing up. Okay, so yeah, let me know if you take this test, trueasiantest.com, and go and reply or comment on my Instagram and Twitter post, which I'm going to share, and we can compare results. A common theme that comes up when I speak to listeners is that we're trying to get in touch with our different Asian heritages, sort of now that we're an adult, because we recognise that we haven't really been embracing our full Asian side, like when we were growing up. So in the spirit of that, a lot of us want to work towards being more Asian. So I'm going to pick something on this list that I'm going to work towards. And if I learn it, maybe it'll make me like a more Chinese person. I don't know. Okay, so the one I'm going to pick is can you do the Asian squat? So the Asian squat, if you don't know, is when people squat and they almost sit, like they're really, really close to the ground, but their butt isn't actually touching the ground. So it's just like a super low squat. Your butt is near the ground and you are like flat footed on the floor. And I just tried to do this and I can't do it. I like rolled back, I fell back. So I don't have that balance. And I don't really understand how people do it, because all of your weight is like behind your feet. So obviously you're going to roll back. That's a really, really relaxed position for people who can do the proper Asian squat. So they can just, you know, watch TV, eat entire meals in that position. But I'm going to work towards that. Actually, I wonder if there's a YouTube channel where I can learn how to do this. I bet there is. I bet there's like a YouTube video. People might search up videos for how to do the splits or how to do whatever yoga position. And for the splits, they might teach you all the different stretches that you might need to help you to work towards doing a split. I'm going to see if there's any special stretches I can do or particular muscles I need to develop in order to be able to do an Asian squat. Please let me know if you can do this, because I can't. And maybe if I learn that, I'll be able to get 31 out of AC8s. So me trying to learn how to be more Chinese or Asian, or me trying to pick up more Asian traits, has kind of been inspired by this episode's podcast guest. So I'm joined by Minju, who is the founder of a site and Instagram page. Actually, I found that Instagram page first. It's called Fluent Korean, and it's all about learning about South Korea, not just the language, but also the culture. So learning about the culture is how you make sure that you become, quote, fluent Korean. And she's doing all this work and research as someone who is Korean but grew up outside of Korea. And while she's doing all this research, she's also sharing her learnings on her website, on the Instagram page, in a really nice way. I would definitely recommend go checking out the page. And I just love the idea of actively trying to learn more about not just the language but also the culture, and maybe that's something that I can do. And she said that also helped her to reflect back on her childhood and build her relationship with her parents, have better understanding of her Korean parents. And I really think that's something that we can all do, you know, to embrace our heritage, learn about it more, and if we want to, obviously it's not compulsory, and then you might learn things that you didn't expect, including about your parents. So Minju shared some what I found absolutely fascinating information about a group of women in a period of South Korean history. I've included the link to her research, or what do I call it, like an article about this, on her website. I've included that in the show notes, and keep on listening to hear about it in Minju's own words. And she speaks so beautifully. I'm really, really grateful to have connected with her just over Instagram, which is fab. Honestly, it's so, so interesting, and I hope you appreciate this conversation too. Don't forget to get in touch with Yellow Bee Pod. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, at YellowBeePod. Email again is yellowbeepod@gmail.com. I would love to hear what you think about the amazing Korean culture that Minju has to share. And I would also love it if you subscribed. So whatever app you're listening to this on, open it now, hit the subscribe button. While you're there, if you want, you can take a screenshot and share it to your story to let your friends know that you're listening to this podcast. If you do that, please, please tag us at YellowBeePod on Instagram and I'll reshare it. And if you want to support this podcast even more, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. I would really, really appreciate that. And thank you so much to everyone who has left a review already. Okay, let's jump into the conversation with Minju, which I am so, so grateful for.
I'm Minju, I'm Korean, but I grew up in Manila, which is the capital of the Philippines. I went to university in Seoul and Beijing. So I grew up in Manila, and I went to a very international school. I think right now the nationality count is over 100, 120 or something. So from a young age, I was always around people from everywhere.
Yeah, well, that is a lot. Well, how many countries are there in the world? Like 200-ish? Yeah. Someone from more than half the countries. That's amazing.
So, you know, I've always been kind of around people who were third culture kids, or, you know, exchange students, or following their families around.
Oh, yeah. Do you want to give a definition of third culture kid?
Third culture kid, I guess. It's like your parents come from one culture and you grow up in another culture, And your third culture is you kind of trying to figure out the mix of both cultures that you're straddling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does mean you have a whole mix of different identities, mm-hmm. but then you also right. pick up different cultures mm-hmm. and values depending on where you live. And for you, that mm-hmm. was mostly Manila.
Right. I mean, we did travel to Korea every summer or, you know, another vacation, but I really grew up in Manila. I think that's where I would say is my hometown, if people ask. And you know, when it's the thing with third culture kids is always like a huge paragraph backstory when people are asking, oh, so where are you from? And at first be like, oh, well, I'm Korean, but, you know, all these parentheses that come after. And then they'd say, oh, but why is your English so good? Mm-hmm. And then I'll be like, oh, it's because I grew up in Manila. So now I say something like, oh, I'm Korean, but I grew up in Manila. Or something like that.
Yeah, just to avoid the yeah. questions. What are yeah. some of the other common questions that you would get either growing up or now as an adult?
Well, when I was in America, I would get a lot of, where'd you learn your English? Or my boyfriend's American, so they'd go, oh, did he teach you your English?
Oh my gosh.
And I'd be like, oh my goodness. I'm like, oh, okay.
If it was that easy to just learn English from a relationship just like that.
I mean, they do say that if you date someone who speaks a language that you're learning, it speeds up your acquisition of that language. But it's certainly not my experience. He's actually trying to learn Korean now, and I'm always teasing him like, oh, I bothered to learn your language. You should learn mine.
That's funny.
I definitely feel like now that I'm really trying to learn more about the Korean diaspora, I'm really understanding the different experiences of Asians around the world. So, like, I might be part of the Korean diaspora, but my experience is completely different from a Korean who grew up in, you know, London or a Korean who grew up in the States. We had a high school reunion, I think it was 2 years ago, and one of my friends, he ended up going to school in New York, and he's Korean, and he also grew up in the Philippines. And he was saying that, you know, when he went to that university in New York, he really couldn't find a place to where he really fit in, because when he looked at, like, the whole, you know, just imagine like the Mean Girls montage of like the school cafeteria.
Yeah.
There's like the Koreans, like Koreans from Korea
yep.
who grew up in Korea. And then there's like the Korean Americans or the Asian Americans. And he was like, oh, I don't really share a lot of experiences with them. So he went to the Filipino group and was like, oh, but then he felt like the outsider thing because he wasn't Filipino, even though he spoke Filipino and, you know, we grew up in that environment. So it was for him kind of tough as well. And when you're in an international school, because everyone is different, there is an element of solidarity, like we're all different. And I felt that way as well in Beijing. You know, you're with a lot of expats or exchange students. And even though you're all from different countries, you still feel a sense of belonging because everyone doesn't belong.
Yeah.
And I went to America for the first time when I was in my early 20s. And because I'd grown up thinking or being told that you're so Western, or, you know, even at home, my mom would say stuff like, oh, 우리 집에 외국인이 살고 있다, which means, oh, like, there's a foreigner living in my house. I always thought that. And because I watched so many TV shows, like Western TV shows, I always felt like as soon as I landed in America, I would feel a sense of like, oh, belonging, you know?
Homecoming.
Yeah, I thought it'd be like, oh, am I finally gonna meet my people? But then as soon as I went to America, I felt more Asian than I'd ever felt in my entire life. I felt more Korean, especially because where we went to in America was a very, I would say, white neighborhood. It was like a white suburb. And I think I was like the only Asian I saw on that trip, except when we went to like Chicago and California.
Oh, wow.
Which is very, very diverse. And that's great. Yeah. So I was like, wow, okay. I'm actually more Korean than I thought. I'm actually more Asian than I thought. And that was like a really important, I guess, realization, because Koreans, it's really hard to, I don't know, be a part of a Korean group if you're not Korean.
Okay.
And Koreans are very friendly and all of that, but we just have so many cultural mm-hmm. things that even if we're in the same room and all speaking English, sometimes there is like a cultural thing that you can't escape. There's like little things that make you feel different. And when I was going to school in Manila, in the international school, because I'd gone to the same school my entire life, I had friends from, you know, all different nationalities. And then a lot of Koreans would come in like in middle school or in the middle of the school year and be very Korean. They would gravitate towards the Korean group. And then there would be the whole Korean group that just hung out amongst themselves because that's what's comfortable.
Yeah.
And I went to Korean school on Saturdays. And I always felt like such an outsider because at the time, my Korean language skills were terrible. I think I spoke Korean, I pronounced Korean words with an American English accent.
Yeah. And so this was completely separate from your international school. So it was a Korean school on Saturdays in Manila.
On Saturdays, yeah. But then a lot of the Koreans who went to that school on Saturday were people who went to school, to the international school on weekdays.
So there was quite a lot of Koreans at your international school.
Yeah, I think it was like 20% were Koreans.
Oh, really? Wow, I didn't know that there was such a big population in Manila.
Yeah, because it's like you can learn English here cheaper than, I mean, the standard of living is cheaper than if you sent your kid to America to learn English. And it's closer to Korea, so you can fly back and forth. So that's one of the reasons why a lot of Koreans send their kids to the Philippines to study English. I don't know, maybe my whole teen years, I was like a kid to graduating high school. I felt so rejected by the Korean community. At the same time, because I felt that like difference, I also kind of rejected that part of my identity for a long time. You know, my Korean wasn't great. I didn't really have the Korean cultural education. My parents were really, really busy working all day, you know, the immigrant story.
Yeah.
And
so were there parts of Korean culture that you like you were exposed to when you were growing up and parts that you feel like you almost missed out on?
For me, the most important thing is closeness with my parents. It wasn't until I really made an effort to learn Korean and be part of the culture that I felt closer to my parents. I mean, there were so many instances now that like I think about it where I took it completely differently than they intended solely because of the fact that I didn't understand, you know, the cultural context of where they were coming from. In the American school I went to, one of the things they teach you is if you're telling the truth, look a person in the eye.
Okay.
And in Korean culture, you can't look at an elder in the eye. That's completely disrespectful.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's a huge difference. So look at their nose or look at their mouth. But for me, I'm like, you know, I thought I was right. I'm just doing what I'm taught. And my dad was lecturing me on something. I forget now. And to show him that I was, you know, telling the truth and being respectful, I was like looking at him straight in the eye with my eyes wide open, you know. And the more I did that, I really want to show him like, you know, Dad, I'm telling the truth, trying to explain to you what this happened. But to him, it looked like defiance. It looked like me challenging him or challenging his authority. And he got even more angry and I just didn't understand why. So those are like a lot of things that, you know, just connections missed.
That's such an interesting example. Thank you for sharing that. Wow, I can definitely understand why you were confused.
So, I mean, that's just like a small example. Or, you know, Korean parents, they are very complimentary about you in their own way, but never to you. So when they're talking to their friends, this woman, my mom was like, you know, saying really mean things about me, you know, just like complaining to her friends about me, like, oh, you know, Minju is like, she doesn't wake up early in the morning or, you know, I mean, there was a lot worse than that. And I always felt like, is that what she really thinks about me? Because she wasn't saying it to me. It was more like in Tagalog, there's a word called barinig. And it's like, you're not saying it directly to someone, but you're saying it loud enough for them to hear.
Well, that's a great word. How useful.
I love Tagalog. It's fantastic. I have so many like words that I love in Tagalog that don't exist in different languages, and it's great. And And for a while, I thought, oh, is this what she really thinks about me? And is this what, you know, does she have such a low opinion of me? And I was really sad about it. But then, like, later on, I learned that it was just like a Korean ajumma nuance thing where she was, and she eventually, I think, told me, you know, if I say nice things about you to her, will she feel good about you or will she feel bad about you? Will she be envious of you or will she want to, or will she think that she doesn't want you to succeed? And she was like, the reason why I was complaining about you is so that she could feel like, no, Minju is actually really great. Why are you saying that about her? She's fantastic. So that was like more of her intention. She didn't want people to like envy. She didn't want people
sound like she was bragging.
Yeah, she
or
didn't
jealous.
Want people to like have bad thoughts about me. You know, she wanted people to want me to succeed, and that's why she was putting me down so other people could root for me. Like, it's like a weird logic, but that was her.
Yeah, that's pretty strange. So she wanted other people to see you in a good light, so in order to do that she was publicly putting you down.
Kind of. I mean, it makes sense in some ways, but like that's also like a weird thing I didn't understand.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand, and I think I can imagine that conversation between like two Asian aunties where one of them's like, oh, she never cleans her house, or she never helps out around the house, or she never she doesn't know how to cook properly, and then the other aunties are like, no, but your daughter is so like smart. You should be happy. Yeah. If she doesn't help around the house, she's just studying.
She gets good grades. She, you know, does activity. You know, so that was kind of like the, you know, like a lot of conversations are like dances, you know?
Yeah.
One time, I think I sat on my dad's suit jacket because he like put it on the bed and I was just like hanging out. And he grabbed his jacket and was like, oh, 너는 etiquette이 없다. And that's like, oh, you have no etiquette. Because I sat down on a suit jacket accidentally. And because my limited language, like my ability to speak Korean at the time, I understood it as, you have no air ticket.
Ah,
so instead of etiquette. Etiquette, like a Konglish etiquette or etiquette. Yeah, English. I spent the whole afternoon looking for an air ticket. Like, I was like, are we going on a trip? Like, does everyone have an air ticket and I don't have one?
How old were you at this point?
I was quite young. I was like 7. But it's something I remember. We used to travel a lot. My dad travels all the time.
And you were like, oh, I get to come this time. Where's my air ticket?
I was like, am I going to join this trip? So I literally spent the whole afternoon looking for the air ticket until my dad was like, no, you have bad manners. I was like, oh.
That's so cute. And you said Konglish. So is that what you call the mix between Korean and English? I haven't heard that term before.
Yeah, it's Konglish.
Konglish.
Yeah, I'm actually doing a lot of research on Konglish right now. It's really interesting. So one thing I learned is that the reason why a lot of Konglish or Korean English, it doesn't sound like standard English at all, is because it was brought from Japan. So it's like a game of telephone, like during the colonization era. So Japan westernized first and then started colonizing Korea. So it was like a game of telephone where it went from English to Japanese English to Korean English.
Oh.
Yeah.
Could you give an example of a term?
Okay. An example would be like the word for cheating in the Konglish, it's cunning.
Cunning. Okay.
Like, to be cunning. But then we use cheating, like we use cunning. Or let's see, like a dress shirt is like 와이셔츠. Like a Y shirt, Y shirt. A dress is one piece, which is like a one piece clothing, and then something with a top and bottom is a two piece.
Oh. But then are there like Korean words for, say, the word dress or the word cheating as well?
Yeah, but I mean, even words like menu, Koreans cannot live without the word menu now. Like, if you ask them to have a whole conversation without using English or other loan words, it's really hard.
Mm. Well, I don't know the first thing around the Korean language. So it's really interesting to hear that.
I mean, it's really interesting. And I'm having so much fun learning.
Because everyone has different experiences, as you said. But then also another person who is a Korean, even if they lived in Manila or another place where they went to international school, will have completely different experiences. So they might find some things relatable. But I think highlighting your individual unique experiences is like really amazing. Could you tell us about which came first, the website or the Instagram page?
Ooh, I think they came around the same time, but drafts, like I've just been writing and writing and writing, and I haven't really published anything, mostly because I'm shy and that's something I'm trying to get over. I think some of my friends who listen to this will laugh at the word shy and me like being put together, but usually when I write something, there's like no name attached to it, and you're always like behind the scenes, and it's something you wrote, but it's not your opinion or attributed to you. It's something that it's like a crafted message for a brand or a company.
Yeah, it does take a bit of courage to put your name next to something which is, you're saying that this is my work, I'm presenting it to the public, the outside world. Yeah, it takes a bit of courage to do that. But then also you should do it because then you get credit for all the amazing work that you're doing.
Yeah, so it's something I need to get over. But the Instagram I started while I was traveling in 2018. And I was like, you know, might as well. At the time, it was more about like, okay, what I need to start thinking about digital marketing, because I'm in traditional marketing. And I'm so interested in like the digital side of marketing, because you can get analytics like in real time. And that's so interesting to me. But everywhere that I was, you know, researching and reading, and I'm kind of like, that's my personality. Everything I do, I have to like do a bunch of research on it, and I have to read everything. And the best way to learn how to do it is to start something. And if you're going to start something, do it in a topic that you're most interested in. And I was thinking, like, in all of the conversations I have, what is something that I always bring up? What is something I'm always like, oh, did you know about this? Did you hear about that? And thinking back to all of these conversations with my friends, it's always like, hey, can you teach me about this? Or, hey, can you, you know, tell me about this? I really want to know. And then to my non-Korean friends, it's like, I just learned the coolest thing about Korea and I need to tell you.
Yeah.
And so that is kind of how it started. But then now it's really more about me finding like a place to put all of the research that I've been doing anyways, all the studying I've been doing, and documenting it in a way that other people can find it easy and simple to understand. So that's really important to me, that when I was learning Chinese, you'd see like a block of text and it would just be so overwhelming. Like even though I could read the characters, seeing the big block of text just overwhelmed me, and it'd make me want to stop in the middle and do something else.
Yeah, and I would definitely say that you present your research in a really approachable and also fun way. So looking at your Instagram feed, it's very colourful, it has lots of graphics, you know, like little cartoons, and you're presenting the information that might normally be presented in a huge article or a researched journal or a huge block of text in a language book. Yeah, presenting it in like a colourful and bite-sized format.
Yes. That's really, you know, my you hit the nail on the head. I want to put them in like fun, snackable pieces of information that, you know, people are like, oh, okay, that's cool. I didn't know about that. And you know, I want them to learn more about Korean culture, because, you know, even me, like growing up, one big part of my initial teenage rebellion / rejection of Korean culture and language and the community was because I didn't understand it. You know, I didn't feel like I was part of it. And the more I learn about it, the more I realize that I'm actually not that different. I'm not this like alien living in my parents' house or this foreigner. I'm feeling like, oh, okay, so that's what she meant, or that's why this is happening. And you know, it's making me a lot more peaceful and helping me fill the gap of the outsider label that I've always felt.
But what does it mean to you to be fluent in Korean?
The whole premise of Fluent Korean and like the website and Instagram started with the saying, one who learns language without learning culture ends up becoming a fluent fool. And the moment I heard it, I think it was in a lecture at one of my classes in Beijing, I was like, whoa, this is my Korean cultural experience summed up in one sentence. Like, okay, yes, I can speak Korean. We grew up kind of speaking Korean at home, but one, at the time, my vocabulary was so limited. And two, my cultural context, my understanding of the cultural cues or the history or any, you know, reference was so limited that even though I was pretty fluent in Korean, I felt like such a fool. I felt stupid. And if you speak multiple languages, I feel like you would have a different personality in each language. And I was so frustrated because I felt pretty eloquent in English. Like, I could form sentences. I can, you know, make sure people receive that message in a way that they understand. Mm-hmm. But then in Korean, I felt so stupid. I felt like an elementary school kid. I mean, elementary school kids these days are so smart. But I felt like, you know, I felt so dumb. I felt stunted. Mm-hmm. And that was such a frustrating situation for me because, I mean, I didn't feel like I was stupid in English. But then as soon as we switched to Korean, I was like, and I was always doubting myself. So in English, I was a super confident, you know, I could speak in front of a large audience and be completely fine. But then in Korean, even if it was just a one-on-one conversation, I'd feel unsure of myself. Is the grammar correct? Is that the right word to use in this situation? Am I understanding this context? And of course, Koreans speak with metaphors all the time. So if you're translating literally in your head and like translating it to English, sometimes it just doesn't make sense. And you get like a completely different, you know, interpretation of what they're saying. And so definitely, like, I even now, I still feel like I'm such a fluent fool. So it's kind of me trying to learn more about it. And I don't think there's ever going to be a time when I'll be a fluent Korean. I don't think there's ever going to be an end goal. I was just listening to Simon Sinek. He's the guy who went viral because of his video about millennials. So he said, what do you do when you're playing a game that has no end, like the infinite game? There's no winner or loser. It just means there's forward and backward. So that's kind of how I feel. Like, I'll never be like 100% fluent, but I'll always be, you know, going in that direction.
And enjoying the journey.
Yeah, and learning a lot. And, you know, even through this, like, I met you and I've met a lot mm-hmm. of people that I would never have met had I not just, you know, taken the plunge. And
yeah, that's amazing. That's a great quote. And it's good to see that you're like learning a lot and enjoying it. I do think that mm-hmm. I could probably benefit a lot from learning about my own heritage and culture and past.
For sure, yeah.
Have you learned anything new about Korean culture which you don't like or don't agree with?
Of course. I mean, there's good things and bad things about every culture. And as much as I have always felt like an outsider, Koreans do have a very, like, Korea first mentality. I mean, it's not in like the same way that's happening more towards the West, but there is definitely a we are Koreans, we stick together. And you know, and the Korean nationalism, I super understand it, right? Because we were almost wiped out. Like, our culture and our way of life was almost wiped out when we were colonized. Like, people lost their names, people lost their language, people lost their mm-hmm. cultural identity during the colonial period. So I understand like where that's coming from, but there are times when people go too far. There are people in Korea who feel like mixing, like, or being of mixed heritage is like
okay.
tainting your blood.
Right. So they don't think that Korean people should marry or have children outside yeah. of their race. Some people don't think that.
Yeah, so there are some people who are like, we need to keep the bloodlines pure. And that's why there are so many Korean adoptees. I read a study yeah. that a big percentage of Koreans in the United States are adoptees. And a big part of that is the whole, like, bloodline thing. They're not part of our blood, so we don't adopt. And
well, because of the Korean culture, they're not interested in adopting other mm-hmm. Korean children, so that then therefore mm-hmm. Korean children end up getting adopted by people overseas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right.
And I'm sure like that's not the only reason why, but I mean that is a strong reason why there are a lot of Korean adoptees all over the world. So that's something I really do not agree with. I think actually Korea is opening up a lot in terms of like being more multicultural. If you watch Korean television, there are a lot more non-Koreans in Korean television, and they speak fluent Korean. They speak Korean so beautifully that sometimes, you know, you have your eyes closed and you're just listening and you are like, are these people Korean or non-Koreans? And I think that's fantastic. I really love it when people, you know, really make an effort to learn your culture. And because it's like, they don't have to. Mm-hmm. It's entirely their choice to, I mean, you know, unless you were like a bride brought in from another country. Like, that's an issue in Korea.
Oh, really?
As well.
So
yeah, because we have.
Where do they quote import brides from?
I think a lot of people are coming in from Vietnam and the Philippines because like our birth rates are so low and there are just not enough women who want to get married. Because feminism also is a really big thing in Korea.
Wow! Yeah, I definitely want to get into this. I want to hear about all of these Korean women who don't want to have kids.
You know, women are voting with their feet. I'm not sure if you know the biggest scandal that hit Korea this year was the Nth Room Telegram scandal.
No.
So basically some creepy pedophile had like a Telegram group or like a series of Telegram group where he shared just horrible images of children and women in compromising positions in like various sexual acts and then sold access to them for like cryptocurrency.
Right.
And of course, like Telegram is supposed to be very like encrypted. It's the messenger platform of choice of ISIS. That's
the more that's you the know. Rumor.
That's the rumor. So that's how they say, oh, it's so secure. And so right now, like sexual abuse, like sexual crimes against women and children is such a big topic. And feminism right now is a huge topic in Korea as well. And a part of that is women choosing not to get married and have kids right away. If you look at the statistics of how women went from like marrying really, really early to where we are now and how many kids they're having, it's a big change from, you know, when we were
That's really interesting. Joseon, what does that mean?
Joseon was the name of the dynasty right before the colonial period. So we had Joseon, and then we went to the Korean Empire, which was very, very short-lived, and then we became a Japanese colony, and then we had the war, and then the First Republic of Korea. So there's like a huge...
Right. So now the birth rate in Korea has slowed down because a lot of the Korean women are not interested in having children, mm-hmm. or at least at this time. So people are seeking brides overseas.
A lot of it is like in the rural area because, I mean, this is happening even in the Philippines, right? So in the Philippines, the average age of a farmer is 50 years old.
Oh, wow.
That's the average. It's not even like the high end. It's the average. And that's because everyone wants to come to the city and, you know, because being a farmer in the Philippines is tough. You know, it's manual labor. You're not paid handsomely. It's a hard life. And so a lot of people are going to the cities or like the smaller cities to find work there and, you know, living in really not healthy living situations. And because of that, agriculture in the Philippines is suffering. And it used to be their highest, like one of their biggest industries. And now it's not. It's more like call centers of the people who are moving to cities to get these jobs. So that's really interesting. And it's kind of happening to Korea as well. A lot of people do not want to be married and become wives in rural areas because emancipation of women, they need to have careers too.
So they move into sort of more urban areas in order to seek different opportunities. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. And I think we see that trend in loads of countries around the world, don't we?
Yeah, yeah. I'm actually working on a post right now called The Kiseng of Korea. Like the Kiseng, the flowers of Joseon. And Kiseng are, I mean, for lack of a better word, they were like the Korean version of geishas.
Mm-hmm.
But Joseon, so the Joseon is like, I think I'm going to get this wrong, but it's 1200s to immediately before we were colonized.
Okay, so
it's like a at long least period. 500 years old. Yeah, so it's like a big dynasty. So don't quote me on the dates, because I have a really bad memory and I will not remember them. Women were treated really, really, not I wouldn't say horribly, but it was just a really tough life for them. It always seemed like they were somebody's property, like you're the property of your parents. And then when you get married, it's like you're being handed over to your husband. As soon as you got married, you lost your name. So if you look at like Korean history, a lot of Korean women's names are omitted, like you don't know them. And if you're or a woman in Korean history and your name is known, that means you must have done something pretty great. Because once you got married, your name was recorded as the wife of blank.
Oh, really? So it wasn't even like you changed your name, but you actually just became like an attachment to your husband.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So like, even now it kind of carries on, but now it's kind of like endearing. Like people would call my mom like, oh, Hyunju 엄마, like the mother of Hyunju, my oldest sister. Or someone would be like somebody's wife or somebody's mother, and that would be their title. But then there was a class of Korean women at the time who were so educated they could write poetry, they could write Chinese, they could write in Korean, they could sing, they could dance, they studied politics, history, and those were the kiseng.
So this is
like huge dichotomy because these like proper women, you know, noble birth, cannot even leave their house or be seen by men because of like the whole Neo-Confucian society. And then there are these like women who technically are prostitutes, technically they're slaves, but they're also seen as the most elitely educated women of Joseon. So I always found that super fascinating.
That is fascinating. Definitely not what you would expect, but now that you've explained it just very briefly, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like I said, like get me started on like Korean topics and yeah.
So the post that you're working on now, it will probably be up once people are listening to this podcast. That post will probably already be up. So you can go to the Fluent Korean Instagram, scroll down and find it.
I just have to, you know, get over my fear of and just press upload. So it's kind of interesting because, you know, women were so seen as proper that and they were supposed to be so loyal to their husbands that if they died, their best course of action was to commit suicide.
So if their husband died, they were supposed to...
and it was like their a great act of piety to their husbands to follow them to their next life or to the afterlife. And the word for master bedroom in Korean is anbang.
Anbang.
Mm-hmm. Anbang. And the reason why it's called like the inner room is because, so an means inside, pang means room. And the reason why it's called that is because all the women had to stay in like the inner part of the house. They weren't allowed to go to the outer part of the house where they could mingle with men, I guess.
Okay.
So they would just stay in the inside room. And now it's kind of like the master bedroom. So, I mean, you have to know, that's why I love this. Because you really have to know the culture to understand the language and like where it comes from and for you to remember how to use it. And that's really what I'm doing with fluent Korean.
Mm. That's really interesting. And we should say that everything that we've been speaking about in the last, I don't know how many minutes, is all ancient history. It's a long time ago. And this is not the mindset in Korea now, just in case anyone is getting that mixed
up. You can see remnants of it, for sure. Mm. I mean, that's why like the feminist movement in Korea is so important, because men, they don't mean badly. They don't have bad intentions. It's just the culture that they inherited.
Right, yeah. Right? And culture, it doesn't change that quick. Like, it's ingrained in society, so.
And kiseng were the first emancipated women because they had a job, even though, you know, it was one of the earliest jobs for women.
Yeah.
But, you know, they were pretty emancipated. They could, you know, earn money and eventually buy themselves out of slavery or get a husband. So it's kind of weird because the first emancipated women in Korea were prostitutes or slaves, who were also very, very well educated. And then the noble or the ordinary common women were, you know, supposed to be people that you protected, and like it was very patronizing.
Mm, no, I can understand.
In fact, I actually read something that even when they were in the house, men and the women didn't speak to each other. They were just like, okay, have my babies.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even when that happened, the women, when they got like the talk, the birds and the bees, they were like, why don't you just, you know, stand still and not make any movement?
For the women, literally just to be like...
Yeah, like, so they were supposed to be like the master of the house in a sense. So they did take care of like all the domestic duties. But as far as like, you know, being in love or like, it was just very rigid as a Neo-Confucian society. And so for men at the time, so we're talking 1500s, 1700s. So for men, they went to kiseng because they wanted to have a lively, flirty conversation with a woman.
Yeah.
And sex, even with kiseng, was never like very, like it wasn't like, I'll give you money and you give me your body. It was more like, let's play this dance. Let's do this dance. Let's flirt with each other. Let's make it like a love affair. And then we can do the dirty. So it wasn't ever like, okay, sex, please. It was like...
It includes like the company
Let me have this. Yeah, so they were kind of like... And it was okay because kiseng were technically outside of polite society. and it was like, it was fine. But with women that they were actually married to, they had to be clean and pure and proper and not have an education.
I'm really glad we don't live in that world now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how do your family feel now that you are actively trying to be more in touch with your Korean heritage?
I think for them it's more like, yeah, that's how it should have been from the beginning. So Asian of them. But I think they also notice that I am making this effort and that I am trying to understand them more. Because for the longest time, we lived in completely different worlds. And I have a really good relationship with my parents. I think my dad is hilarious. My mom is so funny. They make me laugh all the time. And they're also pretty open. I mean, in many ways, they're very conservative, but they're also very open. When I was growing up, I had a friend who later came out as gay, and she was completely aware of it. She was like, that's none of my business, whatever he, you know, he wants to be, that's fine, or whatever he is. And I thought that was really sweet. And they're very open in a lot of ways. And they're very, like, she's very cool. Like, you know, do whatever, like, now that I'm, like, you know, getting older, she's like, do whatever you want with your life, just be happy.
That's great. And I guess they're glad that you're picking up more culture and knowledge now that you should have had even when you were younger.
Yeah.
And do you have any words of advice for other people who might be listening, who want to become more fluent in their own mm-hmm. culture?
I think a lot of dramas. Watch a lot of dramas or like things that show you about pop culture. I heard somewhere, I think it was a professor at Korea University. I didn't go there, but I did like a summer program there when I was in high school. And he was saying that a lot of what happens in Korean dramas shows you what is acceptable in Korean society. So there was a drama, I don't even know which one it is, but there was a drama like when I was in high school where a son slapped his mother across the face. And like the audience were so horrified by that. By the next week, the show was off the air. Like, they were canceled because they were so horrified that how could someone, you know, slap their mother across the face? This guy has no filial piety and off the air.
So Korean dramas reflects the Korean society.
I mean, not exactly. I mean, we should take it with some grain of salt. But a trend that I'm noticing now in Korean pop culture is there's a lot more LGBT characters, which I think is fantastic. There's one in, I think it's Hi Bye Mama on Netflix.
Not familiar, but I bet my younger sister has watched it. I always see her watching Korean dramas, and she has even installed a Chrome extension that allows her to watch Netflix at double speed. Because she's watching it with subtitles, she can consume it a lot quicker.
Oh, right.
And to be honest, she does watch like English-speaking YouTube videos on double speed. But yeah, she watches the Korean dramas on double speed. It's easier because they have subtitles, and it just means that she can consume even more than before.
Yeah, so definitely dramas. I mean, it's not like the end all be all. And of course, like, it's not like a magic cure for you to learn stuff. But it's interesting to see how people are portrayed in pop culture and how it reflects on society in general. And of course, be proactive in reading, in interacting with people from that culture. Well, speaking of dramas, one of my favorite dramas is a Chinese xianxia, like, romance drama called Three Lives, Three Worlds, 10 Miles of Peach Blossoms. And xianxia is like a martial arts film, but then has like Buddhist, Taoist influences of cultivation and immortality. And then there's like a romance aspect to it. Oh my goodness, it's so beautiful. I think it's Eternal Love on Netflix.
Okay.
I think Chinese dramas do like historical dramas so well.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. The intrigue, the scheming, the plotting, and you're always on the edge of your seat. I think I watched Princess Wei Young recently and Empresses in the Palace. Really, really fun. Chinese dramas are great as well. Yeah, so those are my drama recommendations.
Yeah, I know that Korean dramas have fans all over the world now, don't they? And I think that's a really great export that Korea has done. That has brought a lot of interest and just a lot more people learning what Korea is all about.
Yeah, so definitely dramas. I need to be better at time management when it comes to watching dramas, because you can just forget about the time, especially in quarantine, because you're just stuck at home all day.
Yeah. Minju, thank you so much for everything that you've shared today. It's been really great to learn more about Korean culture myself. I feel like I should be making notes.
Well, thank you for letting me ramble on about so many different things.
It was great.
I had a really good time talking to you. And, you know, one of the things that I found in the last, I don't know, the last 5 years of my life is you feel like an outsider everywhere. But one place that I've always felt really at home is when I meet other people who have those mixed backgrounds. People who are like straddling Eastern and Western culture or straddling different cultures. And I feel like people, whether you're a third culture kid or children of immigrants or, you know, in that situation, we all have a, even though they're different, it's somewhere that you can feel together in your differentness. You know, feel the solidarity of being different.
I really hope you enjoyed this episode of Yellow Bee Pod. Thank you so much for joining again. And don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you don't miss our next episode. Actually, I'm going to be going offline a bit next week. I've got a week off work and just need to detox a little bit. And when I say detox, it means I'm spending too much time on social media and it's not any good for me. So I'll catch you very soon with a episode with not one, not two, but three guests. Stay tuned. Thanks for listening to Yellow Bee Pod. It's been your girl, Natalie. Bye! I just recorded the outro sat next to my sister and she's cringing AF. And that's a hint for who...
It's your girl, Natalie!
Fuck off. That's a hint for who the next guest is going to be. Bye!